In the words of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the point in history at which we stand is full of promise and of danger. The good news is that the global economy is on a firmer footing. Millions of people are benefiting from vaccines that hold the promise of a normal life, of embracing friends and loved ones. But there is danger as well.
In this program, IMF Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva with a preview of the World Economic Outlook to be released next week during the virtual IMF World Bank Spring Meetings.
Economic fortunes are diverging. Vaccines are not yet available to everyone and everywhere. Too many people continue to face job losses and rising poverty. Too many countries are falling behind. We must not let our guard down. What we do now will shape the post-crisis world. This will be the focus of our virtual spring meetings next week.
Welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. More than a year into the COVID-19 crisis, signs of a recovery for some countries are slowly beginning to emerge. But in her customary curtain-raiser speech, Kristalina Georgieva said high uncertainty is pervasive and one of the greatest dangers facing the global economy.
So let's look at the economic picture. In January, we projected global growth at 5.5% in 2021. We now expect a further acceleration, partly because of additional policy support, including the new fiscal package in the United States, partly because of the expected vaccine-powered recovery in many advanced economies later this year. This allows us for an upward revision to our global forecast for this year and for 2022, as you will see in our World Economic Outlook next week. Stay tuned. How we got to this point is a tale of extraordinary effort. Nurses and doctors saving lives. Essential workers supporting livelihoods. Scientists from around the world working together to create vaccines in record time. And governments took exceptional measures, including about $16 trillion in fiscal action and a massive liquidity injection by central banks. Without these synchronized measures, the global contraction last year would have been at least three times worse. And yet, while the outlook has improved overall, prospects are diverging dangerously, not only within countries, but also across countries and regions. In fact, what we see is a multi-speed recovery, increasingly powered by two engines, US and China. They are part of a small group of countries that will be well ahead of their pre-crisis GDP levels by the end of 2021. But they are the exception, not the rule. The cumulative loss in per capita income relative to pre-crisis projections will be 11% in advanced economies by next year. For emerging and developing economies, excluding China, the loss will be much worse, at 20%, cutting one-fifth of what is already a much smaller per capita income than in richer countries. This loss of income means millions of people will face destitution, homelessness, and hunger. And we see that clearly. But many other things are less clear. Indeed, one of the greatest dangers facing us is extremely high uncertainty. So much depends on the path of the pandemic, which is now shaped by uneven progress in vaccination and the new virus strains that are holding back growth prospects, especially in Europe and Latin America. there could also be more pressure coming to vulnerable emerging market, low income and fragile states. They already have more limited fiscal firepower to fight the crisis. And many are highly exposed to hard hit sectors such as tourism. Now they face less access to vaccines and even less room in their budgets. And some are already at high risk of debt distress in sovereign, corporate, or banking sectors. Now, add to this uncertainty over financial conditions. Accelerated recovery brings good news overall, but it may also create some less desired outcomes. For example, strong growth in the US can benefit many countries through increased trade. We expect inflation to remain contained, but faster US recovery could cause a rapid rise in interest rates, which could lead to a sharper tightening of financial conditions and significant capital outflows from emerging and developing economies. This would pose major challenges, especially to middle-income countries with large external financing needs and elevated debt levels. Many of these countries will need more support. Return to growth would also mean policy transition and the need to deal with the long-term scars of this crisis. Among them is the impact on human capital, especially on the young, the low-skilled, women, and informal workers. Allowing those scars to persist will result in lower growth potential, making it even more difficult to increase employment and reduce inequality. It is very clear, there will be no sustainable recovery without giving people a fair shot. What should be done? First, we must keep our focus on escaping the crisis. We must follow the example of the scientists by stepping up cross-border efforts by doing whatever it takes to ramp up vaccine production, distribution, and deployment. One option is to pursue at the global level what has worked at the national level, and that is subsidizing vaccine producers, input suppliers, and last mile distribution. The world needs a fair mechanism to redistribute vaccines from surplus to deficit countries and a fully funded COVAX facility to accelerate vaccinations in poorer countries. This is how we can protect people's health, but also how we can accelerate the recovery. Faster progress in ending the health crisis could add almost $9 trillion to global GDP by 2025. But the window of opportunity is closing fast. The longer it takes to speed up vaccine production and rollout, the harder it will be to achieve these gains. While the crisis is still with us, the key is to help vulnerable households and viable firms. This requires targeted fiscal measures with credible medium-term frameworks, as well as continued monetary accommodation. And given diverging recoveries, it is prudent to keep a close eye on financial risk, including stretched asset valuations. And major central banks have to carefully communicate their policy plans to prevent excess financial volatility at home and abroad. Second, we must safeguard the recovery. As the pandemic recedes, government furlough and support programs should be scaled back, but this transition needs to be carefully managed to cushion the impact on workers through income support, targeted hiring subsidies, retraining, reskilling. There should also be further support to viable small and medium-sized firms through equity injections and more effective bankruptcy procedures. SMEs are the world's biggest employer. Yet our research shows that the share of insolvent SMEs could rise sharply this year as support is scaled back, threatening 1 in 10 jobs in this vital sector. So we need further reforms to mitigate these economic scars and promote a fairer transition. Third, invest in the future. The crisis has made the case for pandemic preparedness and more broadly for investing in resilience, especially to climate shocks. A new momentum is building towards greener, smarter, and more inclusive economies. Yep, so far, only a small fraction of fiscal stimulus has been directed to climate and green finance. But the tide is turning, and rightly so. A coordinated green infrastructure push combined with carbon pricing could boost global GDP in the next 15 years by 0.7% a year and create millions of jobs. There is also the potential of digitalization. In a recent survey, almost 50% of shoppers said they were using digital payments more than before the pandemic. I'm one of them. A growing number of central banks are considering digital currencies, which could transform the international monetary system. And digital infrastructure investment could help transform our economic system, boosting productivity and living standards. Now, to unlock this potential, we need to combine better infrastructure and greater access to the internet with more investment in people's education and health. This requires sufficient public revenues and national tax systems retooled for the 21st century. In many cases, this will mean making them more progressive and fairer. And that has to be coupled with modernizing international corporate taxation through multilateral efforts to ensure that highly profitable firms pay their fair share where they do business. All this is essential, but it would only take us so far. The harsh reality is that poorer nations are at risk of missing out on what is going to be a historic transformation to a new global economy built on green and digital foundations. New IMF research shows that low-income countries have to deploy some $200 billion over 5 years just to fight the pandemic, and then another $250 billion to return to the path of catching up to higher income levels. They can cover only a portion of that on their own. Success would call for a comprehensive effort, more domestic revenue mobilization, more external concessional financing, more help to deal with debt. And in that regard, the G20 Debt Service Suspension Initiative, the new common framework, are a good start. For our part, the IMF has stepped up in an unprecedented way. We have provided over $107 billion in new financing to 85 countries, debt service relief to 29 of our poorest members. In sub-Saharan Africa, IMF financing last year was about 13 times more than the annual average over the previous decade. And I'm very encouraged that support is building among the IMF's membership for a possible special drawing rights allocation of $650 billion. This would benefit all our members, but especially the most vulnerable, by boosting reserves without adding to debt burdens. It will send a powerful signal of multilateral solidarity, freeing up resources for vaccination programs and other urgent needs. Just as we have helped fight the crisis, we will help our members secure the recovery. And let me end as I began, with FDR. On February 12, 1945, he called on the US Congress to adopt the Bretton Woods Agreement, which created the IMF and the World Bank. He said, "The world will either move toward unity and widely shared prosperity, or it will move apart. We have a chance to use our influence in favor of more united and cooperating worlds." These words could not be more apt today, when we face the biggest test of our generation. How we work together to build a better world will be remembered for generations to come. Let's give it a fair shot.
That was IMF Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva delivering the curtain raiser speech to next week's virtual IMF World Bank Spring Meetings. Go to imf.org to follow the meetings and find all the flagship reports, including the World Economic Outlook, the Global Financial Stability Report, and the Fiscal Monitor. Look for other IMF podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter @IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.